When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to First Time Dads.
With me, Richard Innes.
And me, Steve Myers. Hello. This week, we caught up with Jennifer Day, who's a parent, coach and counsellor, and whose new book, Intuitive Parenting, How to Tune Into Your Innate Wisdom, is what we discussed.
Yeah, Jennifer was fantastic. Actually, talked a lot about emotional intelligence and basically sort of framing slightly differently the way you approach certain parenting challenges and trying to strip out a lot of the anxiety and insecurity. As you will hopefully hear in a moment, it definitely struck a chord with me. So hopefully it will do with you too.
Jennifer, thank you for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about your book.
Tell us about intuitive parenting, because we talk so often about so many different styles of parenting on this podcast and so many different issues within parenting. What specifically do you mean by intuitive? I realise the answer to this question is read my book, but what could you sum up for us what you mean by intuitive parenting?
Well, intuitive parenting really is the capacity we all have to tune in to our children and the unique beings that each of them are, and parent to what they need. So parent to the specific child. And we can only do that if we can tune into ourselves. And today, I think more than ever, there's so many distractions. There's so many books. There's so much information and podcasts. And blogs and whatever. It's too much. It's too much. And people get overwhelmed. A lot of it's contradictory, a lot of the information.
That's what we find.
Overwhelmed and you end up whatever decision you make, to your point about the sheer quantity of information out there, whatever decision you make, you can make yourself feel bad about that decision, because there will be evidence in inverted commas that you're making the wrong choice.
Yes, absolutely.
And you change your mind as well halfway through parenting, that you think, well, I'm going to do it this way. And then you think, well, actually, this doesn't seem to be working. Let's try something else, and something that you previously discounted. You might return to. So I'm going through some sleep issues at the moment, and so we had discounted sleep training as a concept, and we've now, Jackson's a bit older, we've revisited it, and it seems to be having a bit more success. But I think that's because we've adjusted how we were going to do how we're doing it. You know, we've just approached it in a slightly different way. But yeah, it's easy. In your experience, children react to their parents' lead?
Yes, very much so. And there are two things here that I think are very important. One is that we're overwhelmed by too much information and all that, and that creates stress and anxiety. And that stress blocks the brain. It blocks the centers in the brain that give us the capacity to tune into our children and that give us the capacity to tune into ourselves. So then we get into this stress loop, and we're busy taking the advice of so-called experts and neighbors and mothers and fathers and God knows who. And then we just make decisions based on the peer pressure, if you will, and based on a stress response. We were having a stress reaction. And inevitably, that's not going to work.
No. So do you think, I'm curious, in terms of intuitive parenting as a concept, does a parenting strategy fit into that? Because from what you're saying, I'm thinking about my own situation, for instance, where I've got my two-year-old son, Ben, sitting on my lap. And occasionally I'll be thinking about, I try and think about things strategically, and I try and think about how to approach it in terms of what would work and what wouldn't. And actually, the times perhaps where, and I'm thinking about just last night, where I managed to have a very successful bath time with him, because we ended up playing a game as we were going up the stairs, and I it felt that was more kind of akin to what you're talking about, intuitive parenting. I could see what he wanted or needed at that point, and we just did it, and it worked.
Yes.
So does the kind of idea of having an overarching parenting strategy, as it were, not really fit in with what you're talking about?
Not really, no, because each child is different, so especially if you have more than one, and they also change as they grow. Mm. And this capacity to connect to our child is well, first of all, it results in more appropriate parenting for that child, because you are the expert of your children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me repeat that. You are the expert of your children. I am not, and neither is anybody else who might sit in this chair. But also, you, when you really tune into yourself, then you have the capacity to know which advice to take when you do need to take advice. Mm. You're much more likely to connect to intuitively. Oh, that's the one I need for Ben. And that's the piece of advice. It's a bit different for the next child.
So if Rich and I came to you independently for a session or some help, how would we start off? What's the first sort of steps?
The first thing I start with is to find out what you really believe in. What are your values? What are your core values? And then I would ask you, if you imagine your child leaving home and going off to wherever they're going, what would make you sleep well at night knowing that they have embodied five core values that you've given them?
That's a great question. I mean, my goodness. I suppose that's something you you think around that question, don't you, rather than actually addressing it.
Mm-hmm.
I know kind of what I want my boys to grow up believing in and thinking and standing for.
This is about Chelsea.
They do not need to be football fans. I mean, I'd like them to be, of course, but they don't need to be. Do you know what? One thing I often think about is about being true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I often think that. You know, you think about, well, depends who you grew up to be is, and you know, that's out of my hands. I can help you along the way there. But I've often thought about, I do envisage those future conversations, a conversation you can't have with a toddler, but those conversations with the boys when they're 12, 13, 15. And just telling them, just be who you are. Stick true to that. Don't feel you need to change for anybody. And I've often thought that. I've envisaged those conversations, you know, if one of them was to come to me with some great kind of personal crisis. And I kind of do think about, and I don't know, maybe that's just me. Maybe lots of other parents do that as well. Mm. I don't know. But I have kind of had those hypothetical conversations in my mind. So is that the type of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, also that we do. I think nearly everybody does that.
Mm.
But we also then often mistakenly think that values are passed on through osmosis. Which is not the case, actually.
They need to be communicated.
It does need to be communicated. Yeah. And to your point, it needs to be demonstrated. Mm. So children will follow what you do.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And how you feel.
Yes.
And if what you do is not congruent with how you feel,
yes,
then that's going to be a problem.
They'll pick up on the relationship that they observe in the close proximity between my wife and I.
Yeah.
So if they see that as a inclusive, warm, loving, friendly, happy relationship, that's a good basis for their other relationships, I guess, isn't it? Whereas if they see a really dysfunctional home life where there's, you know, domestic violence and that kind of thing, then that's, I guess, where they're going to take their things.
And it's amazing how quickly they pick up on that. I mean, but you know, Ben is only just two, and he will now, if my wife and I start having a crossword about, so, you know, just a sort of bickering like you would, like any married couple does, and there's some sort of, he can, even if the voices aren't raised, he picks up on the tone. And he'll say, "Stop talking, mummy. Stop talking, daddy." And he picks up on it. And you think, and it's really quite terrifying when you think, "My lord, we're not even really arguing here." He can just pick up that there's, you know, some displeasure in the tone of my voice or something, and he knows and he jumps on it. So you do, it does make you realise that on those occasions where maybe you do have an argument in the front of the car about God knows what, and he's sitting in the back, they do pick up on these things, don't they?
And they pick on it when you try and communicate to each other, like, listening to every word we're saying, you know, you're trying to do it covertly, and he's picking up everything.
They pick up your feelings. So if it's incongruent too, if you pretend everything's fine when it isn't, that doesn't work either. That just makes them feel insecure. So I like to say that your children you are their relationship school.
So is it better to always be honest with them, in the sense that I'm, and I know Steve does this as well, that I'm always very keen to make sure that Ben knows that it's okay to be angry. It's not okay to necessarily shout at someone, or you certainly can't push anyone, but it's okay to be angry, or it's okay to be sad. People get sad sometimes.
Yeah.
So is it better to have that honesty about how you're feeling as a parent and tell them, oh, daddy's feeling a bit sad at the moment, or daddy got a bit angry, or, you know, is it better to have that open honesty with
them? Yes, absolutely. And it's also an opportunity to teach them how to manage emotions. So it's okay to be angry. What are you going to do with that anger? It's not okay to punch mummy when you're angry, but you could punch a pillow. So it's okay to be angry, but it's the expression of it. So you, when you feel angry and you're trying to hide it, it's better that you either manage it, so take a parent time out, and or you say, daddy's really upset right now, I need to go and see what I can do about that, and I'll be back in 5 minutes. And that has a double benefit, because then the child sees how to do it, how to manage emotions, if you're authentically doing it. As well as that you are being authentic in your communication.
It's tough though, isn't it? Because parenting, you're learning on the job. It's not like when you're in your career, you do a job, and then the next job you do, you're like, oh, well, I learned something from that job, and the next one I'm going to do a bit better, change it slightly. Everything you do, every second that goes past, is, you know, you can't wind back and go, I'm going to do that again.
I remember my brother saying to me, because my brother had kids before I did, and I remember talking to him when my wife was pregnant with our first boy about this idea of, you know, God, well, what sort of parent am I going to be, and how are we going to, you know, what sort of parents are we going to be together as a couple and all these things. And he made the point to me, as he had two very small children at the time, he said, Rich, it's all well and good talking about parental strategies and all the rest of it. He says, once you're in the midst of it, believe me, it's day-to-day survival. And you are just reacting to things the best way you possibly can, but you have to make those decisions on the fly at that very moment. There's no chance to refer back to whatever your great philosophy is.
No.
And so I suppose I'm curious as how that fits into what you're saying. I suppose that's intuition, right? Because you're not able to refer to some kind of, you know, virtual document you've got in your mind about what sort of dad I want to be. You are literally having to make those decisions in a snap.
But I guess you can be, we were talking before we started recording about consistency though. Yeah. And if you're a couple, you can be consistent in your approach to discipline, if you like, just to pick an example, to make sure that if dad says something, mum's going to say the same thing. Not this idea that I'm going to go to the parent that's going to give me the answer I want to hear.
What's the trick then in keeping that consistency?
Well, the first thing is what I was saying earlier about core values, is to know what your values are. A, because that's really who you are. That's your blueprint of who you really are. It's what determines what really pushes your buttons in a way that you don't want to unpush, if you will. So if it really pushes your buttons that when you see injustice, but you don't want to, you want to stay angry with that, well, then you need to find a way to channel it. That's a core value. And not everybody has the same core values. And so to discuss that with your partner so that you're on the same page, then you also know what drives you and you know what stresses you out. And that gives you a really good foundation.
Yeah, I'm not sure many people do know that, to be honest with you. I'm not. I think I probably can pick a couple of examples, but it's almost worth asking my wife.
Yeah,
but that's the thing. She'd be in a better position because she's observed me.
That's the thing, and the irony is, you will know on some level. In the same way that I'm the same as you, I couldn't sit here right now and tell you.
I know what some of yours are. Just from doing this podcast, probably.
Yeah, from trying not to lose my temper. I mean, my temper is my issue. I do lose my temper, and not to any sort of disturbing or odd degree, but I just get very frustrated.
So parent timeout might be good for you then.
Yeah, so my thing is, another guest we had on the podcast actually recently made me realise this, that I'm talking to Ben as if he's 13.
Oh.
You know, it's one of those things. It's almost like I'm expecting him. Why are you behaving like that? And actually, he's a 2-year-old, you know, so sometimes I have to try and remind myself. But it's, you know, so I suppose it's very, very common, isn't it? People get frustrated with their 2-year-old child because they're screaming about something entirely irrational.
And they also don't know why they behave the way they do. So asking them why is
I've been trying, I had almost been trying to get into a conversation to say, almost like a post-mortem and say, now, do you know why that was naughty? You know, you tried to hit mummy. Now, that's not okay. That's why daddy got angry. And actually, it was one of our previous guests who said, no, there's no point. That's point. He's 2, you know, maybe when he's 5, but he's 2 now. So it's interesting what we're picking up as we're doing this podcast, because things that that to me seemed like a really positive thing to be doing, to be trying to have a conversation and very calmly talk about the things. And actually, that might have been having more of a negative effect than a positive
one. Well, this actually speaks to the neuroscience, or this wonderful neuroscience that's come out recently that I refer a lot to and use with my clients a lot. The part of the brain that you're speaking to is the front part of the brain, and it has to do with logic, reasoning. It's not developed. It's not developed at five even.
Really?
It's only just starting. Okay. You can have that kind of logical conversation. Maybe when there's sort of six, seven, you can start having and expecting to get some sort of response. But this is where emotions, you know, and emotional intelligence we were talking about earlier plays a part, because emotions drive everything. So your child is first and foremost an emotional being. Your emotions drive what you think, right? So you're angry because you see something, so then you have a thought and then you do, right? So if you go backtrack to your emotions and say, for example, in the example you're giving there, you say to your son, you're angry. Well, that daddy's angry too. What should we do with this anger? Let's go punch a punching bag. And then let's dance around and make ourselves feel better.
Yeah.
And actually to use it as an opportunity.
So it's pure emotion without any reason or logic attached.
Yeah. Yeah.
That does make sense. Yeah. I could see, and in fact, I can picture that. I can see he would enjoy that. He would enjoy being able to use his emotion without having some big man ask him to think about it in a way that he's not possible.
He's not capable. He doesn't have the capacity.
It's really interesting.
I've noticed we've just started to use this concept of a naughty step. Not a particular step, but like a kind of a timeout place that if something happens, it's like, don't do that. Don't do that, Jackson. Okay, right, let's go and have a sit down over there. You sit there for a couple of minutes and then it gives you an opportunity, or seems to give me an opportunity to step away from whatever it is that's causing some anxiety, and him to step away from it. And then we then reconnect and say, what happened? Why are we sat here? And he'll say, because I hit Iris. And I say, we don't want to hit Iris, do we? Sorry, I hit Iris. And it means that I don't then get to a point where I'm reacting at the height of the emotional peak, if you like, because I don't think I'm necessarily making a rational decision because I'm het up because he's just hit his sister. But by separating them, for example, it allows me to have a bit of time and him to have a bit of time. And it seems to be working a little bit.
Well, I'm sure it's working when you're present. But if he's with somebody else, I wonder, is he learning why he shouldn't hit his sister? That's because that's not kind? And he's still a bit young to really understand that. And is he learning what to do with his desire to hit? So are you teaching him? So any moment for discipline is actually an opportunity to teach. So parent timeout's good. I would suggest you go and sit on the naughty step.
My wife is going to love this, by the way.
and then with him, as I was saying to you as well, Richard, that you ask him, well, what was that about? You hit your sister. What we don't hit. We don't hit in this house, right? So what can you do instead?
Yeah,
you were angry, weren't you?
Yeah.
Give him some words. Use your words when you're angry. Yep. And then what can you do with that?
That's what we do say that, because Iris is just coming to language and she makes that. Argh!
Yeah.
And so we say, Iris, use your words. Yeah. What's the matter? Use your words. Yeah. And we said that with Jackson. The naughty step's not a punishment. It's a way of just taking out of the intensity of the moment.
Yeah. If you could give him something to do on the naughty step, because he doesn't have the same thing. The brain is not capable of doing that kind of self-reflection. No. That you would do if you sat on the naughty step. So go and think about it. It doesn't kind of work. He'll be distracted and then he'll come back and he'll have calmed down because he's distracted, which in itself is okay, but it's not teaching him anything. So if you sit him on the naughty, if you put him in a place where that's a bit nicer than a naughty step, maybe some pillows.
Yeah.
Why don't you go and, you know, use your energy and take it out on the pillows and then do some breathing maybe.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. Just to rewind a little bit to the concept of emotional intelligence, because I'm very, very curious about this. And how, because obviously the word intelligence, inherently we ascribe kind of academic ability to intelligence. So how do the two things correlate between a young, and I'm talking again, I guess at toddler age, that's what Steve and I are dealing with on a daily basis. How does that sort of, academic is the wrong word to use when you're talking about kids that young, but that kind of academic intelligence correlate with emotional intelligence? Is there any link between the two?
No, there isn't any link between the two, really. What's been shown is that emotional intelligence is so much more of a factor in success and achieving what you want in life than IQ.
Okay.
And that goes back to studies done, I don't know if you've heard of the marshmallow test.
No.
That was a study done at Stanford, I think it was Stanford University, back in the 60s, where a researcher named Walter Mischel wanted to do a longitudinal study about what makes you succeed, what makes you happy and feel good about yourself. So he started a 20-year study that started off with putting children one at a time, four-year-olds, he had a whole lot of them, with different backgrounds, in one at a time in a studio with a marshmallow on a table. And then they would say, being filmed, say, well, I'm going to go away now for 5 minutes. If that marshmallow is still there when I come back, you get two.
Oh, I've heard a version of this. Mm. I've heard a version of this.
But you can eat it if you like. But if you do, you won't get a second one.
Yeah.
And, of course, what that showed, it was very funny to see.
I've seen this one.
They've reproduced it many times. The original, if you can ever get a hold of it, is the funniest. Because one little boy just bursts out crying, just bursts into tears straight away.
Too much.
It's too much. And another one is my favourite. The little girl, she picked up the marshmallow. She picks out a little piece underneath and puts in her mouth and puts the marshmallow.
Hey, she's the one who's gone on to be the most successful in that long, is it?
I'm not quite sure. But anyway.
So what was the conclusion of the study?
Well, they followed them and they found that when they were ready to go to college, that the only thing they all had in common, the ones who were going to college and who were doing well and who had good friendships and good relationships, they were the ones who waited for the second marshmallow.
Okay.
And again, all the way through life, and they only recently, a few years ago, connected with, some of them had passed away, but they connected with them again and found the same thing. It's been consistent all the way through. Those who waited for the second marshmallow were the ones who...
See, the thing that I'm...
So when someone sends an email around at work about some free food, Rich is like the first...
I'm the first man in the queue.
It's the power of being able to wait, you know, that capacity. Of course, more studies have been done and they've found all sorts of variables and other things that play a part.
Well, I was going to say...
But that's the foundation for emotional intelligence.
Isn't there an argument there that's almost an academic type of intelligence, in the sense that, okay, I've figured this out. If you're a young child, I know what the best, I can end up with two here rather than one.
Yes. That's an element that wasn't taken into consideration at the time. But the capacity to delay gratification that was an important part of the foundation of emotional intelligence was this capacity to know what you're feeling. To start doing something about it. So the children who waited, it wasn't easy for them. So if you watch the films of them, you know, some of them talk to themselves. Some of them sort of walk their fingers around the marshmallow. They have little techniques, right? Mm. And that is the beginning of the self-regulation, which really is the point, and the key to emotional intelligence is the capacity to know your emotions and to self-regulate. So to know when it's appropriate.
Interesting.
To do what with your emotions.
So for kids at the age that Jackson, Steve's eldest is, and Ben, my eldest is, What are the kind of signs we should be looking out for in terms of, I mean, I'm not trying to sort of register my son's emotional intelligence, but in terms of whether it's something they might be struggling with or something they're doing very well with, what are the signs that you should be looking for?
Well, I would rather look at it the other way and say and focus on that emotional intelligence can be taught.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like IQ. It's not. It's
not inherent.
No, some children are more. They're more capable of it, and it's easier. So I would say I myself had terrible emotional intelligence. My daughter was brilliant. So just naturally, but we both had to learn. Mm. So the first thing you do is making them aware of what they're feeling. So giving names, like you were talking about. Signs that they maybe need a bit more work would be that they're not, that they get very emotionally expressive inappropriately, that they have a lot of tantrums or they are not very well able to regulate.
Mm-hmm.
But the sooner you teach them, and I have two granddaughters who've both been taught around the age of 18 months how to manage themselves. And I mean, they're not perfect by any stretch, but they do, they know how to take themselves off. I feel angry. I'm going in my room and stomp, stomp, stomp.
Yep.
bang, jumping on the bed, lying on the floor, having a little tantrum, sitting up, hand on heart, doing some nice slow breaths, looking at the fairies, and then they're happy and come back in.
See, it's interesting that in certain families, and I fall into this category, that initial bit of behaviour you just described could be seen as being naughty. You know, you're stomping off and you're slamming your door and all the rest of it. And I've never, perhaps that I do sort of rush the judgment maybe a little, and not seeing that actually, as you've said, that's actually just part of a process, and that will be the easiest way for them to resolve how they're feeling rather than me saying, stop. You know.
Yeah. It's a three-part process, really. Mm. It's recognizing what you're feeling, acknowledging it, and then releasing it in an appropriate way.
Well, this is, it's
and
really
then changing how you feel.
Yeah, you know? The other day we were sat outside in the garden. It was me, Iris and Jackson. We're having their lunch, and Jackson was dropping food on the floor, copying Iris. She's the one-year-old. He was just copying her and dropping it. And she was seeing him doing it. I said, Jackson, don't do that. Your sister will copy you. And I said, don't do it. And I snapped at him. And he took himself off the chair, took his food into the kitchen, scraped it into the bin, put his plate in the sink, walked off into the playroom and slammed the door behind him. And then I just let him go. And then I went and checked on him, opened the door, and he was playing with his dinosaurs on the...
Brilliant.
He'd just taken himself out of the moment and gone off and done it. So now when he does that, we just let him go. Yeah. If you want to take yourself off and away, then do
perfect.
It.
Perfect. Do it. Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to see him doing what you just said, which is making those decisions that I'm going to, you know... go off rather than just collapse onto the floor and start kicking and screaming, taking himself. And we tried to make his bedroom his place for that, you know, where it's got all of his bits that he loves. So he's got his bookshelf and he's got a nice bed and he's got a little armchair that he can sit in. And if he wants to go to your room, you can. You know, it's your safe place, your kind of like little den where daddy just, you know, go up there, daddy leave you alone, it's fine. You can go and do your thing.
Yeah, interesting.
And that will help him too, and all children who are allowed to do that and who are allowed to be okay with their emotions and learn to manage them. It tends to keep you in touch with your intuition, keeps you connected to that, and it sets you up for much more.
Because my wife, her biggest concern with me is that my instinct, and I am trying my level best to rein this in, is to almost squash Ben's anger a little bit, and I'm aware I'm doing that, and it always happens almost instinctively, and as soon as I've done it, I think I've done it again, and I'm trying not to do it, but for whatever reason he starts kicking off and I'm like, right, enough, you know, and sort of shutting him down a little bit. And she'll always say to me, don't shut him down, he's got to, you know, learn to deal with his anger. And she's right, of course, and you know, she will probably be listening to this, but right, of course.
It's a little game you could play. You could have a family game called 1, 2, 3 Scream.
I like that, yeah.
And she could say, right, we need to play 1, 2, 3 Scream. Yeah. And then you say 1, 2, 3, and everybody screams together.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
How does that work in Pizza Express?
1, 2, 3 silent scream.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3 silent scream. We're like 1, 2, 3 silent scream.
1, 2, 3 scream wouldn't make you terribly popular with your fellow diners. But
I found myself like, Rich, we've spoken about this in previous podcasts, getting a bit of rage as a parent when you first become a parent. A lot of anger, a lot of frustration, a lot of, it's some of it's tiredness, some of it's, you know, emotions, you don't know how to cope, where's your place in the family unit. And I found myself getting cross in front of the kids and angry, and then started to take myself out of the room. And I wonder if Jackson's picked up some of that from watching Daddy do it. Daddy walks out the door and slams the door, or not slams the door, closes it, you know, with some aggression.
that sounds like a slam, Steve.
Yeah, it is a slam. Or walk down to the bottom of the garden. Yeah. You know, just walk down to the bottom of the garden, give myself like a moment, rather than feel the boiling point come and Vesuvius erupts in front of everybody, and then it's them that then leave rather than me.
Great.
That's interesting, because I've done the polar opposite to that thinking, and now that we're sitting here talking about this, I've realized that I've been doing the wrong thing, in the sense that there's some part of me that feels like if I leave, then I'm sort of abdicating responsibility or something. You know, there's some part of me that feels, well, I know I'm the dad here, I'm supposed to be sorting this out. So I will allow myself to get really, really angry. And it's got to the point where occasionally my wife will say, look, just go and
you know, go upstairs or go and sit in the garden or whatever it might be. And then I'm almost affronted, like, well, no, I'm the parent here. I'm supposed to be sorting this out. But actually, maybe especially from what you guys are saying, actually that would be the positive thing to do, would be to take myself away and show that, okay, I'm going to go and process my anger and then I'll come back in.
Come back. It is important, though, that you say you're going to come back.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That's really, really key. Yeah, I need 5 minutes now and I'm going to, and then you come back in. I'll be back. And you come back in with a much more positive attitude and that they can see that you've, daddy's changed. Oh, what did daddy do?
Yeah, daddy's gone upstairs, taken his t-shirt off, put a clean t-shirt on, come backstairs, and that's enough time. Yeah. Where did you go, daddy? I just went to change some t-shirt.
Daddy's been screaming that's into enough. A pillow. Yeah, I've done exactly that a few times. Do you know, I'm aware we've been talking for half an hour, good Lord. If this is whizzed by, because there's been lots of very interesting insights.
It's been really useful.
I'm looking at the back of Jennifer's book, Intuitive Parenting, and there's one line on here which I have to ask you about, because it sounds like the magical solution to everything. It says, discover the one simple tool to managing your stress. So easy, your child can do it too.
Well, it's sort of what we've been talking about, in a way. Well, I'll be a bit more specific. So the biology of stress, right? It's emotions are in your body, right? And we tend to just think of it as a head thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a head thing, really. And there's a little key, I think it's sort of like a really special piece of information, is that your heart has a rhythm. It's called heart rate variability. That is the space between each heartbeat that creates a pattern that alters depending on what you're feeling, your emotion. Mm-hmm. And the more negative, if you will, or the more unpleasant your emotion, the more your system, your entire system, feels threatened. And this is, you know, the brain's one threat system, which is designed for big brown bears and lions.
Fight
and tigers.
Or flight.
Fight or flight. We only have the one system, sadly, which is why our brain doesn't really cope very well with the very, very sophisticated society we've created, right? Because it's that one system that's activated all the time when we're having a reaction. So how do we intervene there? How do we stop that system? Because that system has the capacity to fight or flight. Mm. And also not just by making us stronger, but also by shutting down certain centers in the brain that would be inappropriate if you were confronted by a bear with an injured paw, for example. Mm. If you felt empathy for that bear, now by the time you've finished saying, oh, you poor thing, look, see the paw, whack, you're dead, right?
Yeah.
By the time you've been curious about whether it's a Norwegian bear or a brown bear or a black bear or whatever, you know, again, you're dead. So there are centers in the brain that have to do with curiosity, creativity, empathy, language, all of that, that are not helpful when we are threatened. So they start to shut down, which is why when you're angry or you're stressed, you don't know what to do. Mm. And you can't certainly get in touch with your intuition, because your brain, those centers aren't functioning properly. You're getting ready to fight a bear.
Yeah, it's putting all the power into one.
It's totally inappropriate.
I can attest to that completely.
Right.
Yes.
And so what's happening then, what's going on in your brain and your body, is your heart is sending messages to the brain saying, go on, stress, rah, 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 right? Yeah. All these sounds or signs. And that's because it's incoherent. It's very chaotic and the brain's responding to that. So if you can get your heart rhythm to calm down and become more harmonious.
Deep breaths.
The deep breaths are, you extend the exhale. So don't take a deep breath in, because if you're stressed, you already breathed in. Fine. And that's contributing to the chaos and the signals, the chaotic signals.
Yeah, so the oxygen in the blood and all that.
So this is the business about women in labor having a straw. Imagine blowing the air out.
Yeah.
Very, very, very fine amount of air.
So you start by exhaling. That's the one that you start by exhaling.
Don't
long,
puff.
Long exhale. And then you take a deep breath in and you breathe out again, long exhale. So you breathe in for four counts, out for six.
Okay. Wow.
And you will notice immediately that your brain starts to switch on and you get more clarity. Now, maintaining that, you know, requires that you actually go
practice.
Off and change the way you feel, that you practice, and you do it when you're not stressed. Mm. So, for example, when you're on the tube or you're in an elevator or something, practice taking slow breaths, four counts in, six counts out.
I am definitely going to do this. I have to say, there have been many times where we've had different people on the podcast and I've asked them sort of for some one magic tip, and the response tends to be, well, there's no kind of one magic solution, but blah, 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 you know, read my book.
read my book too.
But I am loving that. That is that's a fantastic.
I think this
could
be really good for you, Rich.
I think that's going to be brilliant. Yeah, that's really
good. I think it's going to be good for both of us, but I particularly think it's going to be good for you.
Yeah, I'm not shy about talking about my rage issues on the podcast. I mean, I'm not a complete raving lunatic. I should just point that out. You know, I'm talking about sort of kind of reasonably normal levels of frustration in the home.
That's I think it's wonderful that you're talking about it, because I happen to know that there are lots and lots of people out there who have the same problem, and I used to it myself. So, and it's very important that we talk about it, because that way others are going to be inspired to actually do something about it and not feel like they're weird.
That seems like a really good point
to
leave
on which
it
to wrap
today.
Up. Yeah, absolutely.
Jennifer, thank you very much for coming in. I feel relaxed just having spoken about it.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly going to go home tonight with double bedtime to try and bring in some of those calming techniques.
I'm going to listen back to this recording and I'm going to start trying to implement some of this. And most importantly, I'm going to read your book.
And if you have listened to this recording and you have find some of the techniques we've spoken about useful, then please do drop us a line and leave us a message in the iTunes comments. And, you know, it would be good to hear from you, especially if your name is Lindsay and you're married to Rich.
Lindsay, do not write in. You can actually email us at firsttimedads@reachplc.com. So if you've got any questions or suggestions or just anything you want to get off your chest, please do drop us a line. As Steve says, please do leave us a review and a rating, because it definitely helps. And we'll catch up with everybody next time. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.